Right now, I believe U.S. Senator Jim Risch is joining us on the Neil Larson Show. Senator, is that you?
It is. How are you, Neil?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the program. It's always good to have you. So you're back in Washington, and how's the feel? I asked this of Senator Crapo yesterday. How's the feeling in Washington right now among Republicans? You ended the last year on a pretty high note, passing the tax bill. So how's the feeling inside the D.C. bubble now?
Well, you know, it just depends on what group you go to. I mean, amongst us Republicans, we have a really clear vision of everything we accomplished last year, including probably the best tax bill that's written in the history of the country. And people are going to feel the effects of that over the next year as we go along, and that's going to be a good thing. The Democrats haven't changed. They're angry. They're confused. They're full of hate and vitriol, and it's all about Trump. You know, I've never seen a human being, for better or for worse, that's been able to capture the attention of a populace like Trump has. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is no sentence uttered here that doesn't have the word Trump in it, including what you want for lunch. I mean, it's just it's phenomenal. It really is. And when you get that overlaid with this hate and this anger and this vitriol, it makes for a pretty sour situation amongst the Democrats.
We know, you know, you go back to the election a little over a year ago, and we know that there were people voting for Trump that were not telling even pollsters that they were voting for Trump. So there's kind of this shadow constituency that Trump has. But I want to ask you a question, because we keep hearing about this blue wave or this blue tsunami that's coming politically, and Democrats are going to retake the Senate. They're going to make big gains in the House and all of that. But I'm thinking, if the economy continues to do well as it has under Trump, and it takes off even more because of what was passed in the tax bill, do you think that come November, Americans are going to be of the mindset of, hey, let's screw this up and change the power dynamics in Washington? I mean, don't you think the economy's just going to help Republicans if it's doing well in November?
Well, Neil, that's lots and lots of questions. But first of all, the economy, people underrate the economy. You remember the old sign, it's the economy, stupid. That's if people have a job, if they're secure, if they feel their job is secure and they can take care of their family and that sort of thing, they're usually not ready to turn the apple cart upside down. Now the national media is, of course, because they hate Trump so bad.
Right.
But and if there's one thing we learned in the last election, that is that the polling that we've relied on for so many years just is not accurate anymore for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And the pollsters back here, they're going along just like life is the same. But those of us who have dealt with that for years know that it is not the same. Instead of calling and having direct information, they now use these algorithms and everything else to figure out what the answer means on the telephone. So that's assuming they can get a hold of people. So the polling, they're just, I have no confidence. In fact, somebody hit me with a poll the other day. One of the national media guys said, well, the polls say that. I said, are these the same pollsters that told us that Hillary Clinton was going to be president? And he said, yeah, good point. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. So, you know, as far as things changing here, you know, it is true that under the circumstances we have, where one party has the White House, the House, and the Senate, in the first midterm elections under that, the average loss in the House of Representatives is 32 seats. Now that's huge. I mean, that swings the House one way or the other.
Yep.
Now whether that happens or not, you know, I can't answer. I'm not as up on that as I am on the Senate. Yeah, on the Senate side, there are 33 seats up. You know, one third of the Senate goes up every 2 years.
Right.
And on those 33, we have 10 of them. They have 23 that are up. We're protecting 10.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 that we have we're actually in really good shape on. I mean, Arizona was a problem when Jeff Flake, before Jeff Flake announced he wasn't running, he had issues both primary and general. But now they're going to have a robust primary there, and whoever comes out of that primary is probably going to be pretty solid.
Yep.
The next one on the list would be Nevada, he's running really, really well. And so after that, there's just nowhere for them to go. I mean, the other eight are rock solid. Now, on the other hand, out of the 23 they have, there's a dozen of them that are running in states that Donald Trump won. There's about four of them that are real, that have real issues and are upside down. Claire McCaskill in Missouri is a problem. Joe Donnelly in Indiana is a problem. Both of them are blood red states now. And so, Joe Manchin, who's a really nice guy, but a Democrat from West Virginia, is going to have his hands full. And there's a couple more. So for them to flip the Senate, they got to flip two. And Senate races and governor's races take on a life of their own. They aren't as subject to the vagaries of the general political climate. They're subject to the candidate themselves running for that office, because people are usually pretty in tune with the race for the Senate and governor of the state. So we're cautiously optimistic about hanging on to the Senate. The House is another issue. I think that remains to be seen. Like I said, historically, it's a challenge, but I guess we'll take it a step at a time.
We're talking with U.S. Senator Jim Risch. You brought up Arizona. Sheriff Joe Arpaio announced earlier this week that he's throwing his hat into the ring in that race. And I know typically, especially when there's a Republican primary, sometimes you're reluctant to weigh in on any one candidate. But your thoughts maybe in that Arizona race, would the Arpaio race, do you have fears that could become a Roy Moore 2.0 situation?
Maybe not. There's actually going to be a pretty robust primary there. You have, he's announced. There's another candidate who's announced that is a favorite of Trump's. And then there's a third one that has not announced yet. And her name's Martha McSally, and she's in the House of Representatives right now, experienced politician, pretty polished. I wouldn't be trying to write a script for that yet at this point. You know, I think it'll be a fair primary. And I think the one that comes out of it will be somebody that can win the general.
All right, Senator, let's shift to immigration for just a moment. As you know, immigration is not just one issue. It's a collection of several complex issues. The president sat down for a televised public negotiation with Dick Durbin, some other Democrats. There were a lot of Republicans there as well. What did you make of that? Because it was fascinating I listened to it. It was on the radio, but it was just a fascinating process to see that happen live before the America's, you know, before the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, the everybody always thinks these things are they're so secret and they're so esoteric and what have you. But as you probably saw in that, it was people sitting around a table and exchanging ideas and trying to come to a resolution of it. That's the way things work in these closed door meetings that everybody wrings their hands about. I mean, it's just people trying to resolve an issue. There was a little grandstanding, of course. When you can't help that when the cameras start to roll, you know, politicians want to talk and promote themselves. So yeah, there was some of that. There's no question about it. But look, this issue's been kicking around for a long, long time, and I have obviously there's some people that have a deep interest in it, and I've kept telling them that it wasn't ripe because we had so many other things going on. This issue was ripe right now, and it's getting discussed and. There's going to be something moving on it here within the next 2-3 weeks we go down the line. The Democrats are saying they're going to shut down the government if they don't get this, that, or the other thing. I doubt that. I think that they would be, and they can. You know, they can shut down the government because in the Senate it takes 60 votes. So we can deliver all 51 Republican votes, but if there aren't... 9 Democrats that vote on a cloture to cut off debate, they can shut the government down. So, but I really doubt they're going to do that. I think the American people are going really angry if the Democrats shut it down because they wanted to legalize 800,000 people that are here illegally. I suppose there's some issues you could argue that, yeah, it's worth shutting the government down for. But on this, I doubt people are going to be very sympathetic with Democrats wanting to do that. Having said that, there is some give and take here that that can get this thing resolved. The Democrats want a straight legalization of these 800,000 people. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get that. I mean, that flat is not going to happen. The details of it are going to be very important for all of us that vote. That is, if you know, there's a humanitarian issue here. We get that. I mean, you know, you got a lot of these kids were brought here as babies, and if you deported them to where? I mean, they really have no citizenship, and have never known anything but the United States. That's a humanitarian issue. I get that. We all get that. But having said that, you can't go along and not secure your borders, because the minute you legalize these people, within the next hour, somebody's entered the country illegally, and away you go again. So you've got to, if you're going to do that, number one, you have got to secure the borders. And then, of course, the chain migration thing drives us crazy. We're the only country in the world that allows that. And also the diversity lottery is something that a lot of us are very much opposed to, where the government goes out and actually recruits people from countries to migrate to the United States, even though they have no skills. They can't read, they can't write, they can't take care of themselves. They need medical care, they need shelter, they need food, and they say, okay, come on in under this diversity thing. I mean, there's 7 billion people on the face of this planet. We have a limited capacity to be able to take care of people. Now, we are a country of immigrants, have been, but times are changing in that regard. The country's now matured, and we're the only country in the world that has immigration based on family ties, as opposed to what can you do for us? What can you do for America if we let you in? And we're going to try to make a shift in that.
Going back to the Dreamers, you mentioned that it's probably not just going to be a straight up, flat out amnesty for that group. What sort of expectations or restrictions? I mean, what would you like to see for those 800,000 people who are here in order for them to stay?
Yeah. First of all, I'm not one that is demanding citizenship. I mean, I can understand where they have some kind of a path to a legal status here.
Yeah.
Everybody says, well, there should be a path to citizenship. Well, there is. The problem is it's lengthy and it's difficult, and they don't want to do it. So I'm not hung up on that. But as far as a path to remaining here legally after they've been here 20, 30 years since they were a child, I get that. I can understand that. But I have got to be convinced that this resolves the problem. The bill resolves the problem, and that means it has to have border security. You just can't go on and on and on with this. Again, we're the only country in the world. We saw three hikers who were hiking on the border of Iran and stepped in accidentally and spent 8 years in jail. I mean, we're the only country in the world where you can just walk in and then stay here. So you are not a sovereign country unless you can control your borders. We have got to do a better job of controlling the borders.
Last question here in the last minute or two that we have. We're talking with U.S. Senator Jim Risch. Budget negotiations, I'm starting to see some headlines about maybe a government shutdown. Are we going to have another continuing resolution, or will we actually have a budget? I mean, how do you see this playing out?
Oh, probably in the short term, probably a continuing resolution. But the media here, I mean, anytime you get close to a point congressional action is needed, they all start wringing their hands about a government shutdown. That hasn't happened for a long, long time. Probably not going to happen. all of us here understand we weren't elected to shut the government down. We were elected to govern. Now, to me, that means governing in a lot lower level than what we're governing at. Smaller government, spending less, taxing less, regulating less. But nonetheless, you still have to govern. And a shutdown is disruptive in a lot of different respects. Some people want to shut down the government here, but not very many. We need a smaller, more responsive government. But the government's got to govern in order to have tranquility, in order to have business that can count on the kind of things that a country does.
Yep.
So whenever you hear the words government shutdown, my dad used to say, "We'll see." I know what that meant. And I guess I would say, "We'll see." Probably not.
All right. Senator Risch, thank you for your time, as always. We appreciate it.
All right. Nice to talk to you, Neil, as always.